It's raining, it's pouring.
We're talking about the weather again.
Okay, all right, enough. Enough.
Niff.
Enough.
Enough with the weather, yeah. I don't know what that
what
is.
What the hell is that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But our waffle can't always be about the weather.
Okay, waffle. Waffles are good.
Mm-hmm,
waffles. Oh, for God's sake. Mm. We've got to do something better than this. Our poor listeners.
They know they'll get anything from this bit. I mean, really.
Oh, God.
Sorry we're a bit late this week.
Yeah, we've had a lot of things happen.
Stuff and things.
Yeah. It's all good.
Absolutely.
It's all good.
So I think we'll just get on with it, shall we?
Yes.
Yay. What the... Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history that will make you say, what the history?
Your fortnightly bits.
I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Susie Holland, who will not laugh at everything Trev does.
Or hit the desk.
Or hit the desk! Again. Bad desk. Naughty desk.
It's going to be one of those episodes, listeners.
Shivers. Oh, my God, what a day. What a day. I am glad it's over, and I'm going to read you guys some history that we have found out together. You may have realized, dear listeners, hi, that by now I love history. And, yeah, this is why I'm doing this podcast. And my favorite period of English history is the Tudor period, which began in 1485 with the accession of Welshman Henry Tudor, who became Henry VII after the Battle of Bosworth Field, which ended the reign of Richard III. Everyone like that lesson? Great. This glorious period of England ended with the passing of Queen Elizabeth I in 1603. So imagine my surprise and what the moment when Trev told me of an article regarding a prolific author by the name of Bram Stoker, yes, that Bram Stoker of Dracula fame, who is noted to be 100% convinced that Elizabeth I was actually a man masquerading as a woman. So I needed to research this. Elizabeth I was born to one of my favourite Tudors, Queen Anne Boleyn and King Henry VIII at Greenwich Palace in 1533. As history goes, Elizabeth lost her mother at an early age, boo Henry, and as per royal children, not having much to do with their parents back then, often spent time away from her father and his court. Plague attacked London in 1543, and Lady Elizabeth, as she was known then, was sent to stay in the Overcourt Manor House in the village of Bisley, Gloucestershire, in the Cotswolds, to escape from the pestilence. Her governess received word that King Henry himself was going to visit his daughter, and preparations were being made for the king's arrival. The story slash theory goes on to say that while these preparations were taking place, Elizabeth fell ill and died from a fever. The household flew into a panic on what to tell the king about his daughter, and the call went out for a girl who looked and sounded like Elizabeth. However, none could be found, so their gaze fell upon one of Elizabeth's childhood friends, a boy named Neville Blount, who looked and sounded like Elizabeth, owing to red hair and pale skin. Neville was dressed in Elizabeth's clothing and adornments befitting a lady, and the household breathed a huge sigh of relief for Henry's fits of temper, as we all know, killed people with one stroke of his quill, and the governess and those in the know thought that they would be killed as well. After all, Henry hadn't seen Elizabeth since she was 3, so the plan went ahead without a hitch, and Henry was apparently delighted with his daughter's wit and learning. The body of Elizabeth was placed gently in a stone coffin and forgotten about. Bit sad. Time went on and young Elizabeth eventually became queen, and the rest is history. Bram Stoker enters the story as manager of Covent Garden's Lyceum Theatre and personal assistant to actor Sir Henry Irving. Sir Henry was looking for a country house in the Cotswold, and when he came across the story of the Bisley boy and told Stoker, and they were both keen to investigate. Sir Henry and Stoker were both fascinated by a pageant in the village on May Day every year, which featured a boy May Queen dressed in Elizabethan costume, knowing that such pageants were based on a sliver or more of fact. Thus became a chapter titled The Bisley Boy, named after the village, in Stoker's 1910 book, Famous Impostors, and Stoker was utterly convinced the story was true. Queen Elizabeth was a man. Stoker backed up his claim about Elizabeth's true gender by reminding the reader that Elizabeth never married or had children. Her many wigs that hid male baldness, she refused all doctors except her private ones, that her governess Cat Ashley and her treasurer Thomas Parry and his cousin Blanche Parry, who was the gentlewoman of the Queen's bedchamber, all knew and were sworn to secrecy to the grave, and thereby obtained and or kept their lofty positions. And her famous speech, which is as follows, and everyone knows this one, I know I have the body of a weak, feeble woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a king, and a king of England too. And I think foul scorn that Parma or Spain or any other prince of Europe should dare to invade the borders of my realm, to which rather than any dishonour shall grow by me, I myself will take up arms. I myself will be your general, judge, and rewarder for every one of your virtues in the field. Yay! That's a great speech. Which Stoker believes gave away Elizabeth's true gender, as such a speech could never have come from a woman, and Elizabeth's tutor, Roger Ascham, wrote in 1550 that, and I quote, the constitution of her mind is exempt from female weakness, and she is endued with a masculine power of application. And she also had a love of ruffs to hide her Adam's apple, or his Adam's apple, and that she didn't want a viewing of the body, or her body, or his body, after death. Wow, Bram. Interesting. Reasons against Stoker and for the Bram, what the hell are you talking about side are, Henry was not stupid. Surely he must have known a boy when he saw one. Marriage negotiations which took place and subsequently called off had doctors confirming her female gender. She did have her favourites such as Robert Dudley, who many dancers would have realised that she was a he, her laundress who was bribed for information by Philip II's emissary, reported that the Queen was functioning normally and was menstruating. And could anyone pass as a woman while going through male puberty? You boys out there? I really don't think so. And someone somewhere would have told the story after too much wine, surely. So, what do you think, everyone? Was the Virgin Queen, our Gloriana, good Queen Bess, really a virgin king? Or had Stoker fallen victim to his Victorian upbringing that would have him believe that a woman could never be as strong or as domineering as the Queen in her own right prior to his own Victoria? Perhaps the last words should be that over 300 years later, the owner of Overcourt Manor, a Reverend Thomas Keble, found a stone coffin with a young female skeleton enclosed, wearing a Tudor-style ragged dress with no explanation on what she was doing there or how she got there. What the indeed.
I think Bram should stick to fiction. Oops, yeah. Did I just have an opinion?
Oh, you had an opinion. No. Oh, dear.
Controversy.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Personally, I think Bram should also stick to fiction. But there is an... But that's just my personal opinion. Not necessarily fact, everyone. Okay. There is actually a book by someone with the last name of Berry that I saw last night, and it's called... The King's Deception, which has him backing up Bram's claim. So, yeah, check that out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. So, the indication of someone pretending that they were really something when really there was somebody before the... This is a labored...
Trev, that's a terrible segue.
This is a labored
what
segue.
What the hell is that?
I don't know because I don't have any other connection I can make.
I think maybe someone taking credit maybe for somebody else's things when they shouldn't have been.
Yeah, that doesn't really work.
Kind of
no.
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 Introduce your story, sir.
There's absolutely no connection between our stories.
And I thought there was, but
you can never know. Anyway.
Anyway.
Monopoly.
My favorite game, everyone.
If there was ever a game linked to capitalism and consumerism, this is it.
Hey!
Available in many different versions, physical and digital, as well as a heap of branded theme editions to keep any serious collector busy for years. The game of property purchasing, where the idea is to climb to the top and put your fellow players out of business. A game largely held responsible for many family disputes at school holiday time.
Yep, our place.
And it's school holiday time now, so yes.
Yes, it's on.
The official history from Parker Brothers states that the game was invented by Charles Darrow, an unemployed man in the midst of the Great Depression, who presented the game to them in 1934, giving them a hit and making Darrow a millionaire. A nice story of inspiration and success, right? Well, it would be if that was the whole story. For many years, the true history of Monopoly remained shrouded, and it has only been in relatively recent times that the details of the original game came to light. Enter Elizabeth McGee, commonly known as Lizzie. She was a daughter of Scottish immigrants to the US, living in Washington, D.C. at the start of the 1900s. Lizzie was a stenographer, a staunch feminist, and believed in a radical idea known as the single tax theory. So this theory, created by 19th century politician and economist Henry George, posited that there should be a land value tax, or the single tax, letting everyone own 100% of anything they produced, while everything found in nature, with a big focus on land, should belong to everyone. In 1903, inspired by Henry George's theories and the rise in popularity of board games, Lizzie decided to produce a game aimed at educating the populace about the dangers of private land purchasing and the benefits of the single tax theory. Patented by Lizzie in 1904, the Landlord's Game had two sets of rules. Under the prosperity rules, every player would financially benefit whenever someone purchased property, leading to everyone winning once any player had doubled their starting cash, thereby promoting the benefits of the single tax theory. The alternative monopolist rules focused on buying as much land as possible, charging ever-increasing rent, and sending those that could not pay to jail.
Yay! Well, bankrupting them completely.
Absolutely. There could only be one winner once the rest of the players had been made bankrupt.
Sorry.
Sounds kind of familiar. The point of the monopolist rules, according to Lizzie, was to, quote, let the children once see clearly the gross injustice of our present land system, and when they grow up, if they are allowed to develop naturally, this evil will soon be remedied.
I love this,
end
girl.
Quote. So, why did Charles Darrow get all the credit? Well, over time, people created homemade versions of the game, particularly once the Great Depression set in, and would share these copies with their friends. One fateful night in 1932, the holders of one of these versions, Charles and Olive Todd, showed their good friends, Charles and Esther Darrow, this wondrous real estate buying game they had learnt. The Darrows enjoyed it so much that Charles Todd made up a copy for them. No one knew that these games were inspired by the Landlord's Game, so they referred to it as the Monopoly Game. Fast forward 2 years, and the fateful meeting between Charles Darrow and Parker Brothers occurred. Sensing a hit, Parker Brothers did their research and discovered the patent lodged by Lizzie in 1904. To avoid legal issues, the company generously, big quotes there, offered to buy the patent from Lizzie for $500, with a promise they would produce copies of her game alongside Monopoly. They weren't going to pay royalties, though, but Lizzie was happy for her game to be out there. Parker Brothers, however, only produced a very small run of Lizzie's original game before effectively burying it, leaving the game known as Monopoly to take the spotlight without any acknowledgement given to the game's true creator. Despite a very public protest of her treatment at the hands of Parker Brothers, Lizzie was not able to get the recognition she felt she deserved before her death in 1948. This story would not surface again until 1973. Ralph Anspach had attracted the ire of Parker Brothers and was facing legal action over his creation of an anti-Monopoly game. Looking for ways to undermine the business's case, he came across the story of Lizzie McGee. This legal battle lasted a decade, but eventually Ralph prevailed, with Lizzie's story pushed into the public record. Despite all of this, the official history of Monopoly, as told by the current rights holders Hasbro, begins in 1935 and gives Charles Darrow full credit. I have no doubt that if Lizzie McGee knew of this, she would let out an exasperated, "What the history?"
Yep, I would be too. Bless you, Lizzie.
I wouldn't mind trying out the landlord's game.
Yeah, why not? I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
And
we can learn about the single tax theory while we do it.
We can. We can. I didn't know about the single tax theory until you told me.
Well, I didn't know about the single tax theory until I looked into this.
Isn't it amazing what the history does, everyone? It brings all these stuff that you didn't know out.
It's like a domino effect. It's great.
I love it.
I mean, to be honest, I have come across other What the History is, researching What the History is, so I've got to add that stuff to our list of potential What the History is.
Which is now 14 pages long, everyone, so you can just see how it flows. Like, you find one thing, you just go, oh, that sounds really interesting. Like, with this little Elizabethan one I've just done, you know, Trev found out that Bram Stoker was a absolute conspiracy theorist. So I'm looking forward to seeing what other conspiracy theories our friend Dracula's creator has uncovered.
It could be very interesting.
So I'm looking forward to that.
And this was at a time before conspiracy theories were ever really a thing. So he's almost like a pioneering conspiracy theorist.
Oh, my goodness.
See, just
Can we give him a tin hat?
The rabbit hole just keeps on going down and is deep and is awesome.
Yes. So thank you for coming with us on this wonderful trip.
So we
down the rabbit hole.
Hope you have enjoyed this trip down the rabbit hole. If you do want to know more about what we've discussed, we've got our references down in the description below.
Yes.
Unless you've come across us on YouTube, then you've got a link to a page with the references. Okay?
I'm sure when the link on YouTube goes up, I'm sure that Trev will have quite a few paintings that are attributed to Queen Elizabeth I, and you can decide for yourself.
Susie's trying to make me do more work.
I'm sorry.
And if you would like to get in touch with us, we would love to hear from you. You may even know some bits of What the History yourself that you think could be looked into a little bit further. Mm-hmm. You can find the What the History podcast page on Facebook. We're at pod_what on Twitter, or use the hashtag WTHpod, or you can send us an email to WTHpod@rufusproject.com, or even head to our homepage, WTHpod.rufusproject.com, where you can leave comments below this very episode. There you go. We make it easy for you. Oh, and you could even leave comments on YouTube too. That would work as well. I shouldn't leave that out.
Yeah, please leave comments. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your cat and dog and birds.
Share it generously across all your social medias.
Yeah, and, you know, like we always say, please have a look into stuff. We like our What the Historians to be, you know, able to look into other things themselves as well. We are not the holders of all the information.
No.
The world is full of information. Go and get it.
It's all at our fingertips. It's so good.
Yeah, I remember the Encyclopedia Britannica's.
Yeah.
I can't even get the words out today.
You go through and, I bet encyclopedias wouldn't have a thing about Bram Stoker thinking that Queen Elizabeth was a man.
She's a man,
she's
baby.
A mad man. Well, she's very mannish. No, no, no. No, please.
We're not going to do that again. Powers. Not again.
No. So I think on that note, we should probably wrap things up. And we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say, what the history?
Good night, everyone, and happy Easter.
See you. Enjoy Chocolate Day, if you don't observe Easter stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, I personally don't observe Easter, yeah. However, I observe the 4 days.
However you observe it, whatever you do, enjoy.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Bye.